Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This podcast is also a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. I created Better Leaders, Better Schools because I was fed up of not having deep conversations, vulnerable, authentic conversations about school leadership. And that's why you keep coming back week after week. You listen to this podcast as an investment in your own leadership development. If you would like to invest in the production of Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have really good news. It's extremely affordable. $1 or $2 a month will go very far and make a big impact. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. To become a patron, it's easy. Just click the link in the show notes, become a patron. Thank you for investing in yourself and thank you for investing in this podcast. Thank you for listening every week. Let's get this show started.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
You need to have more rigor in your lessons. What the heck is rigor? We need to see more engagement in the classroom. What exactly are you looking for? One of my new teachers needed to have more presence in the classroom. We are supposed to, according to Common Core, infuse more technology, like a perfume. And I'm looking at these verbs and these words, and I'm not so sure that if we say we have to have a more inclusive climate, I'm not denying they're the right things. I'm not saying we don't want rigor. We don't want inclusive climate. I want to know what the teacher can actually do.
So ladies and gents, may I introduce to you Jennifer Abrams. So Jennifer, a movie's being made of your life. And you could choose anybody to play you on the big screen. Who will play Jennifer Abrams and what will the title be?
Wow. I don't have an exact title. I was asked recently from a writer's circle question on Facebook, describe your world in 6 words. And my answer to that was got sick, got out, got brave. So I think something about, I don't know, maybe that could be the title, Got Sick, Got Out, Be Brave. I'm told I look like Liza Minnelli, but that will not work for this. So maybe we'll get Hillary Swank. She does teachers. To cut her hair, I think I kind of look like her. Jamie Lee Curtis, too old at this point. So okay. We got to find somebody more my age.
Gotcha.
But yeah, Got Sick, Got Out, Be Brave.
Do you know that 6-word activity that you went through? Did that come from the Ernest Hemingway?
No, it was actually not that one. The writer circle on Facebook is where I got it. And I ended up posting that on Twitter. And then somebody else, it didn't go very far. It didn't have a lot of legs, but I ended up having to figure out what am I about? What's the story of my life in 6 words? And that's sort of, I guess without being the too much information, you know, kind of thing, mm-hmm. That was about all it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I love those boundaries that they put around 6-word stories and mm-hmm. That forces you to really get clear on mm-hmm. what you want to say.
You bet.
So what's the strangest thing that you're carrying in your wallet or purse?
My father at one point gave me just a sentence. It was like a little inspirational thing, which is really ironic given that he wasn't as adventurous in life, and he's still alive, as this is. But he wrote me, and I think it was maybe Auntie Mame's quote, but it was, very few people come to the banquet to eat. Make sure you're one of them. Love you, Dad. And I carry that as sort of a reminder that life is short and that you gotta go for it.
So what do you do to, I guess, maximize your time on this earth then?
I say yes to a lot of things, including this amazing opportunity.
Oh, come on.
I talk to Uber drivers. I did an entire blog on a consultant walks into a bar. Nothing is sort of off limits. If you want me to come to India, I go. If you want me to come to Bali, I go. If you want me to come to the middle of Arkansas, I go. Life is large, you know, if you say yes. So that's what I do.
So speaking of saying yes, is there a place that you've said yes to that was unexpectedly delightful?
Boy, is that an interesting question. Kenora, Ontario, Canada. I had some really interesting conversations. You have to go to Winnipeg.
Okay.
You got to take a right, and you have to go into the woods. And just the idea of the people I met and the challenges they face and the kindness that they have for each other was really, it was just remarkable. And I appreciated them.
Well, hopefully we're treating you kindly in Chicago.
Love Chicago. Love it. Can't get enough of Chicago.
As a child, what was the best birthday party you ever had in your honor?
I think it was in the basement of the house that I lived in Edina, Minnesota, in the suburbs of Minneapolis. And I think it was probably my fifth grade birthday party, and somebody did a sort of like a puppet show for me. Mm-hmm. And given that I love theater, we all sat in our dresses on the basement floor,
yes.
Which I think is sort of ironic that we dressed up for the basement. And we watched this sort of, I don't know, event, and I was mesmerized, and I loved the idea of the dress up, and I loved the idea of the theater. So
you were
it was
going
really
to the
sweet.
Theater, so it makes sense
to
dress up.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I thought it was really very sweet.
How would you describe your leadership style, and how did you develop this style?
My leadership style, I think, is quite authentic. I am authentic in my voice. I tell the truth. I'm not very, it isn't that I haven't learned how to be politically savvy. I understand hierarchy. I am very aware of organizational dynamics. I also think as a Gen Xer, I am pushing against that and trying to tell the truth a lot more. So my style is more transparent, more, I would say I love, but with challenge, I guess. And so my style is supportive, but nudgy. And very authentic in where my heart comes from.
I like the idea of being authentic, and I think a lot of us are on a journey of figuring out what it means to take off our masks. Do you have any tips on how we can find our authentic self or find our voice?
A lot of meditation, a lot of quiet, and a lot of awareness of the fact that life is short and you gotta play now, and why are we not being true to who we are? I was raised in the Midwest. I love my Midwest background. I went to school back east, and then I went west, and I think I de-thawed,
gotcha.
Shall we say. So what would be good practice for being more authentic? Get yourself a lot of places and have to figure out who you are, not just code switching, but you want to be integrated and whole. So don't just stay one place where your mask becomes too fixed. Get out, try different things, see if you feel like your tribe is someplace else. And I guess my advice is, my last piece of advice is get a passport.
Gotcha.
Get out.
Yes.
That
usually
helps.
Was there a particular moment that started the thawing process?
That's a really interesting question. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 98. I had an exacerbation at some point between my teaching and moving to working with teachers versus being in a classroom. And then I had another one. And I remember going to Esalen. Now, this is really de-thawing. So for everybody who doesn't know what Esalen is like, it's what was discussed at the very end when Don Draper was sitting in that woo-woo place at the end of Mad Men, and he's sitting there meditating on the Pacific Ocean. That is a true place.
Okay.
And I went there, and I ended up sitting. This is a really true story. I ended up sitting in a hot tub at midnight. You go naked. It's just the way it goes.
Right.
You go naked, and I was sitting next to two people that were in their 80s from the Holocaust, who had actually been in the Holocaust.
Wow.
I was next to a couple who was lesbian and they were nurses, and a preacher from South Carolina. And we all sat and looked at the moon and talked about our lives. And I thought, if all of this can come together,
yeah,
naked in the hot tub under the stars, there's something bigger, and I need to start getting closer to this a lot more. So that's sort of a story that represents my moving.
A fly on the hot tub at that moment to hear that conversation.
It was a beautiful moment. I've never forgotten it.
Wow. How often do you meditate?
I'm trying to meditate for about 20 plus minutes every morning. I'm trying to do it before I do presentations, and I'm actually really trying to stay softer and more compassionate and gentler for a few minutes at the beginning of every training that I do so that I can actually get to the place that I want to be in order to help people grow. And I think you can't be hard, you can't be cold, you can't be masked if you're going to try to get your words out and help other people do the same.
So if I hear you correctly, this idea of being softer and gentler increases engagement and allows people to...
For me.
Yeah.
For me, it does. I was told by a very wonderful consultant named Michael Grinder when I was first starting to consult that the irony was that I was being too credible. I wanted to be so expert. I was standing tall. I was kind of assured in my stance. I was not sort of quiet asking questions. And he said, you want to be more credible? Be more approachable.
Wow. Do you know Michael Hyatt by any chance?
I don't.
He has a wonderful blog and podcast. And one of the things, I hope this relates, but when he got into speaking professionally, people would always ask him, are you upset? And he'd say, well, why? Well, you're scowling. You always have a scowl on your face. So he hired one of his friends, and his sole position, stand at the back of the, you know, auditorium wherever he was speaking, and he pointed to his face if he wasn't smiling, and that would put a smile on Michael's face. So, you know.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to probably be so assured and so declarative and so affirmed in what he was trying to say, because we think that that's supposed to be what we're about. And it ends up ruining everything because we can't relate.
Yeah. So what do you consider your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
I think this has happened twice for me. In a quest to be right and to get my word across and to try to advocate for the little man, the little woman, the kid, I came off as shaming of the leader that was in the room.
Gotcha.
And it happened twice to me, and I was put in my place verbally by the first person, and I was never asked back to do any work by the second person. And what I realized was you cannot want to one up the people that you're trying to collaborate with. You can't shame the people that you're trying to support. And I got too shoulda, woulda, you should kind of finger wagging with my language. And it didn't support where I was trying to go. And I think that it taught me that you gotta know the developmental levels of where people are and where you are, and I can't be pushed to run a marathon if I haven't actually, you know, started walking on the treadmill, and I cannot be shamed for not, you know, for not getting there fast enough and still want to try. So I realized that there are so many people that are much more generous. Not that they're not encouraging to move forward, but they're more generous in the journey. And that was a lesson that I needed to learn.
Yeah, and I think a key takeaway too for our listeners is that when you operate in this idea of should haves, that you're just going to get let down, and you're also going to burn bridges and hurt people in the process. And I do that too. You know, I'm sad to admit, but that's one of the key takeaways I think I've learned in my own therapy sessions, and just try to really work hard to question, you know, why do I think that it should be this way? And is there other ways of doing it?
Yeah. And I'm not so sure I can get there by pushing you. You're going to trip. I'm going to trip on you. And we're not going to get there.
So I really love your work. And we're going to link up these articles that I'm about to mention in the show notes for our folks. And definitely your website, too. One of the articles I want to highlight was called Clarity First, Accountability Second. In that article, you distinguish between clarification and hard conversations. So can you unpack those terms for us?
Yeah. That was a guest blog by a very dear friend named Peter DeWitt. It was a guest blog for Peter DeWitt, who does Finding Common Ground as a blog for Ed Week. And I was really interested. So let me tell you a backstory. So that'll kind of make sense. I have a very dear ex-boyfriend. His name is Sean. And I was very angry at Sean because he wasn't connecting with me. And I blamed him for how we weren't getting along because he didn't connect with me. And then he said to me, okay, love, because he's Irish, you know, what the heck is, what do you mean?
What's connecting,
right? And what struck me was I had never clarified what I wanted. And instead I just went to, you know, dissing him and being mad at him and he was wrong. And what I recognized was there's a connection to the teaching practice that we do, because I think that every administrator and every supervisor and everybody at a district office is an educator. And the question is sort of, has somebody violated some expectations, but do they even know what the expectations are? And so if they don't know what the expectations are, you can't have a hard conversation. You have to have a clarifying conversation. And so we think adults should know better. We think they should be clear about some pretty abstract stuff, and then we presume that they're doing it wrong when we don't see it. And yet I'm not so sure that we've ever been clarifying in our discussions, and you shouldn't actually have a hard conversation unless you have a clarifying conversation first.
So I think in that article too, you talked about maybe the challenges with prescribing, you know, I guess what the clarifications are. And we do this for our students. We tell them through rubrics, through, you know, cover letters, what we want from the kids. So how does a school leader, you know, tell his or her staff, this is what I need?
I think it's really interesting. So just to, and it pushes people and they get really cranky at me because adults should know better and they yell at me. So I'm going to give you,
They really yell?
They look at me and they say, this is so patronizing. I can't believe that I have to actually spell this out. I mean, if they actually knew how to do their job, they wouldn't need me to do this. And it really is a defense mechanism for the, not a lack of critical think, well, it's a lack of critical thinking at that point, but the fact they haven't thought through what they want. So all of the abstract words that I think that we have in education, so let me give you all examples, need to be spelled out. So I read a lot of evaluations. You need to have more rigor in your lessons. What the heck is rigor? We need to see more engagement in the classroom. What exactly are you looking for? One of my new teachers needed to have more presence in the classroom. We are supposed to, according to Common Core, infuse more technology, like a perfume. And I'm looking at these verbs and these words, and I'm not so sure that if we say we have to have a more inclusive climate, I'm not denying they're the right things. I'm not saying we don't want rigor. We don't want inclusive climate. I want to know what the teacher can actually do that you could see and that they could then feel good about. Right. And because I work a lot with new teachers, I want some hands-on specifics for those people. The worst thing I remember hearing was and it's not terrible, but a principal wanted to have a hard conversation with his assistant principal, and he wanted to tell her she wasn't leadership material. And I was, okay, whoa, that's a total inflammatory, you know, just disturbing thing. You've just, you know, attributed everything, you know, she can't ever be a leader. What do you mean? Well, I can't believe if she knew, she'd be able to be a leader. And I said, is there anything she can do in a meeting? Should she be writing you on Sundays? Should she be taking initiative by A, B, and C? Oh, and he got really angry at me for having to be a thinker and a mentor. That's the piece around clarifying and hard. That's quite challenging for me, that we would never do for kids, I hope, but that we definitely do for adults, that I don't think is serving us at all.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show.
What I hear you saying too is just getting out of our heads as a leader too.
Yeah.
You know, not have these expectations for folks that are silent almost, or, you know, not very clearly articulated, that you got to say these things, get them out of your head, tell people exactly what you want, not in a condescending way, but just to say, this is what I expect.
Right.
You know, and then continue the conversation from there. Let them add to it too, so that you could be co-laborers in whatever you're trying to build.
Absolutely. Same thing with the word professional. You should just be more professional. You need to be better, you know, you need to be a better collaborative partner. I agree. I have no idea what you're asking.
So what does it look like?
What does it look like? So just, yeah. And it's not easy to get that nitty gritty for some people, but I think it's going to be the way forward.
That's a really good challenge to school leaders and all the listeners, just to be more clear in setting your expectations. And it's going to pay off so much on the back end of it. So in another article called Planning Productive Talk, you asked a question that really was very interesting to me. So I'm going to pose it to you. You're the expert. So how can adults talk to one another in a humane and growth-producing way?
Well, the growth-producing, I think, leads back to the question we just talked about with clarifying. Okay. That if you're going to be growth-producing, you have to be articulate and distinct and specific around what you want to see instead of what you're seeing. I think that that helps be growth-producing because you're moving toward a desired state from an existing state. And then I love the concept that you mentioned of co-laboring toward, might it be this way, might it be that way, what do you think? So that piece, I think, requires a lot of critical thinking. The humane piece is, to me, have you been mindful of the language that you think might trigger? Have you been thoughtful on not going immediately toward, here's the issue, here's the concern, but that you know that you're coming with a tone and some statements of respect and goodwill, that you want to do this for a specific intention, and that you hope that you still have a relationship when you're done. So I think that you've got to articulate that and be vulnerable enough to start that way and to end that way. Because there's like a, it isn't so much, and I know people are going to be thinking, oh, it's the hot dog, it's the bun, and then the meat, and then the bun. It is, but it's so much more sophisticated than that.
Right.
And to me is, people will say to me, want to give you a little feedback, Jen, you know, about your workshop? And I say, great. I would love if it comes in a humane, growth-producing way. And most people haven't thought of either. So they go, oh, I have to get back to you on that. They just wanted to share their feeling. That's not going to be as helpful in keeping me growing and in helping the relationship grow.
A lot of times, too, if it's just what you're feeling in the moment, it could potentially be hurtful and volatile.
Right.
Because you might need to sleep on it for a day.
Yep.
And then actually come back to it. So it could be humane and growth producing. So for our school leaders that are listening, where can they go? Or how do they practice these skills? How do they develop them? Because, again, I have to admit, it's not natural to me, right?
No, and it wasn't natural to me. And that's why I wrote myself the workbook, Having Hard Conversations. I was told from a dear old colleague named Burton Cohen, and yes, he is older than me, but he's retired. I would say things and I was so blunt and so harsh that he would have a saliva moment.
Yeah.
And then he would say, Jennifer, that was not ready for takeoff. and he would say, you need to really revise what you're going to say so that it can actually be heard. And so I wrote myself that workbook, Having Hard Conversations, and I offer to anybody here who's on the podcast to listen to how they're going to frame stuff. And if you hear me even on a phone or in Skype making saliva moments, we know we got to change it. But how can you practice by really kind of having the basic steps and working with a colleague before you go into a conversation that you want to make sure is humane and have them hear you, not read it. I want them to hear you. And as you hear you, you go, I don't think that sounds, because you'll see somebody's poker face or lack of poker face. They'll go, you know, you'll see a wincing and you'll go, okay, I really do need to modify that. We are never so aware of which words trigger. And people have pet peeves about abstracts. You say data and people go nuts. You say evidence and people go nuts.
Research,
right, and people go nuts. So there are certain words that should be pretty neutral, but they've got heat to them. Do you know politically, and I say that not just sort of macro, but sort of culturally in your school, which words have been overdone, which words have past history, which people might hear certain things and need you to be more sensitive. There's a whole piece to the filters with which people will hear you and how have you even thought about that before you go in. So there's a lot of practice.
Well, you are obviously an expert in hard conversations. We have learned so much. You've also recently published a book, The Multi-Generational Workplace. Can you share with us what the main message behind that text is?
Yeah, I was just mentioning that I was known as blunt and too harsh, and I think that many of my generation, I'm a Gen Xer, I'm 48 years old, born between 1961 and 1980, we have a tendency to be a little bit more pragmatic, efficient, get things done. We end up coming off a little bit too dismissive to our boomer colleagues, and we come off as a little too harsh to our millennial colleagues. And what I discovered in working with new teachers and working with administrators who were supervising the new teachers was that there was a real misunderstanding going on between them in their communications and in collaboration and PLCs, in their supervision and writing up their documents for evaluation. And I was like, whoa, we have got to have this conversation. And so that to me is the multi-generational filter. And that will then lead to gender, race, country of origin, and all the other filters that we need to be much more aware of when we are communicating across the school.
So in addition to those texts, having hard conversations in the multi-generational workplace, what's another book every principal should read right now and why?
I'm going to do a shameless plug to the last book that I just wrote on January 18th that came out, which was Hard Conversations Unpacked, : the who's, the when's, and the what ifs. So that's my last book. I am completely excited about this book, and it's because I love her, but I don't have it in my hands yet. So I'm endorsing something I haven't read, but I read the article that's based on it called Tell Me So I Can Hear. And it's written by two Columbia University profs and lecturers, Ellie Drago Severson and Jessica Bloom DeStefano. And I am really interested in how people deliver feedback that's pitched at a level that people can hear them. It requires them to be other focused. It requires them not to be just thinking about themselves, but how might somebody else need me to say something? And I've done a little bit of work with the articles they've written on this topic, and it has opened many people's minds. So it's going to be out of Teachers College Press, and it is Tell Me So I Can Hear.
That's a really awesome book that we want to check out at Better Leaders. And again, all of Jennifer's work will also be linked in the show notes, so encourage you highly to check those things out. So what do you do for fun?
I go see theater. I love theater. I spent a whole day, because I'm a theater geek, at Steppenwolf here. And a couple weeks ago, I was in New York seeing theater. Theater is something that we need to support, because the human condition comes out in a two-hour piece. And I think as leaders, we need to understand what people are feeling, what people aren't saying, what's happening in the silences, what's happening in the nonverbals, what's happening in relationships. And I think for me that theater helps me understand my fellow humans. And it's just an extraordinary medium.
Have you acted in any shows yourself?
Not since I was 17
years old. What
was
the last show you were in?
But I think it was Guys and Dolls, and I was in the ensemble in Edina High in 1984. But I'm on. I mean, sort of in my head all the time.
That's right. Worthy of a standing ovation, too.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
So Jennifer, you're moving to a deserted island. Besides family, you can bring three people. Who would you bring to the island and why?
I was asking my friends, David and Jackie's 10 and 13-year-old these questions. And one of them said, we absolutely need a survivor. You know, somebody from the show Survivor.
Yeah.
They were being very, very practical for me. And then one of them said, you got to bring somebody funny, but not annoying funny. And then proceeded to explain what that meant. And I agreed with that. And then they said, and then the 10-year-old said, you need a friend. You need to bring a friend. So I actually think I definitely need a survivor. I definitely need a funny friend. And maybe, I don't know. I'm not sure about my third person. Can it be alive or dead?
It's up to you.
Oh, I don't know. So, it's a desert island. I'm being a poet. I don't know who it would be. As long as I have my survivor, I need a poet.
I'm going to offer up Langston Hughes.
Okay. I'll take Langston.
He's one of my favorites.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, definitely. That's very cool. I will consider him. Thank you.
Yeah. In the pre-chat before we started recording, you mentioned the same 10 and 13-year-olds helped you unpack this question. Mm-hmm. And I like their response, so I still want to ask you this. Okay. So we can share it with the audience.
Good, good.
But you're building a school from the ground up, not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
Okay. Well, Jacob and Samuel suggested curvy slides instead of stairs. That was just absolute. And then one of them suggested yoga balls instead of chairs. And the other one suggested whiteboards everywhere, not just in the library, because that's just like too boring. And I tried to explain to them that actually two out of those three actually happen in schools all over the world. Right. And they were like, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So I think what would I want? Lots of space to be relaxed and to be inventive. And so I got to think about it. That and a lot of space to perform. Those are the two things.
Perfect answer. Jennifer, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Find your voice around what matters is my sort of my tagline. I want people to find their voice around what matters to them. And you can find me around that topic at www.jenniferabrams.com or at jennifer@jenniferabrams.com or at Twitter. At Jennifer Abrams.
Again, all that will be linked up for you in the show notes. Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Jennifer. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Jennifer in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. On most mobile phones, you could tap the cover art and show notes page will magically appear. Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you.
Hey, Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.